there's a lot of good teams that have average catchers. There's no great teams that have average catchers. Every great championship team has a good guy behind the plate. Hi, my name is Zan Barksdale from Catching 101. I'm extremely excited to be on ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Welcome back, coaches, and thanks for taking our call. You're plugged in to the latest edition of our ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse. This is our podcast where we connect with some of the best baseball minds in the game today. We truly appreciate you guys listening in each and every episode. We work to create certified audio gold, and we could not thank you guys enough for your support of this project. On behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, let us take a quick moment and thank each and every one of our valued members, what you guys bring to our great association, and we just continue to try to bring more content for you guys to help grow you as a professional, and we hope that it translates over to your players and helps grow our great game. My name is Jeremy Schiedinger, and I had a great pleasure of sitting down and talking catching with Zan Barksdale from Catching 101. Zan was a professional catcher, a former Division I assistant coach and catching coach. And what's great about Zan is he's really entrenched out in this community. He's doing great things to help develop catching coaches and provide resources and books, DVDs, apps, products. He also puts together CatcherCon, which is an annual event where all the great catching coaches from around the country come together, talk about their craft, and work to become better for their players. And Zan gives us great information throughout this podcast. We're excited to bring it to you. We hope you really enjoy this episode. And again, thank you guys for what you're doing for the game of baseball. So today's guest on Calls from the Clubhouse, I'm honored to be sitting and chatting with Zan Barksdale, a personal close friend of mine, but also a guy out in the baseball community that I know our listeners are interested to hear from. And he's just done so many great things from a coaching realm, but also in really developing catchers. And that's what we're going to spend the majority of our time on, is talking through catching stuff. And Zan, it's an honor to have you on the podcast, man. Thanks for joining us.
Sheets, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. I'm obviously, like you said, a big fan of you. Been friends for a number of years. I'm a big fan of the ABCA and also a big fan of the podcast. So I think we got the trifecta. I'm excited about today.
We fit them all. And, you know, for the guys that are listening in, I'm shocked if they're into catching or they're looking to improve their catchers, if they haven't stumbled upon all the various things that you're involved with. But if that is the case and they're not familiar with you, give them kind of a breakdown of your coaching past and experience, but also what you got your hand in and what you're trying to do to develop the catching position.
Well, that's a lot more difficult question than it sounds like, because I do have a lot going on. So I played in college in Mississippi. I went to Holmes Community College, and then I played at Ole Miss for a couple of years. And then I was fortunate to play a couple of years in the minor leagues with the Braves. And then I started my coaching career at the University of Louisville. I was there for 5 years on Dan McDonald's staff. And then I moved to East Tennessee State and coached for 4 years for Tony Skoll. And somewhere in that time, I have kind of started, you know, sharing catching information with people on the website and through books and DVDs. And so now my website, Catching 101, is where I spend most of my time. I've also got a catching conference called CatcherCon, where basically I try to make my daily goal to share as much information as I can with people, whether that be through Twitter, on my Twitter handle, or sending out newsletter emails, or just chatting with people at conferences or speaking engagements. So I feel like the luckiest guy in the world, completely, to be honest. I get to spend all day, every day, thinking about catching, writing about catching, talking about catching, and that kind of takes me to where I am today. And as of this past summer, I was actually named the 14 and under catching coordinator for Team USA, which is one of the biggest honors and privileges that I've had an opportunity in my entire, I would say my entire baseball career, but honestly, in my entire life, there's not much more prestigious than getting to represent our country with USA across our chest. So I just got finished with those guys for the summer, and now I'm back and getting ready for a productive fall.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, and you and I have conversed quite a bit, but in setting this podcast up and the time that we could record, we were trying to navigate through your USA baseball experience and trying to find a common time that worked. And I know I personally want to know some insights, but I know our listeners would love to know how that experience went for you. Like you said, putting on the USA across your chest is such an honor, but working with some of the best players in the country, just go through that experience for us on kind of a day-to-day basis, but then overall what it meant to you.
Sure. Well, it's one of those things. It's the first thing I have to say, and there's a lot of points that I could hit on it, but I'll try to keep it fairly short. The USA Baseball organization as a whole is just a first-class organization. Everybody you encounter is super professional, super organized, super detail-oriented. The events are they're smooth as butter. Everybody involved with it, from the staff to the interns, to the full-time guys, and to the other coaches you interact with, is just really first-class. And I wish I had another word that would describe it, but I think first class is the best way to say it. So I had a great experience. I spent a few weeks in Florida helping scout the 14U and 15U teams, and then I spent some time in Cary, North Carolina at their headquarters, where I helped out with the 15U trials, and then I was the catching coordinator for the 14U National Team Development Program. And it is, like you said, it's been a bucket list, and I've got a bucket list saved in my computer, and I told the guys this there. One of the things for me on my bucket list was to listen to the national anthem while coaching for Team USA wearing a Team USA jersey. And fortunately, I had the honor of seeing that come true this summer, which was awesome. But it was great, you know. Working with the players and seeing the dedication and seeing the passion these guys have. One of the things that I thought was really neat is, you know, we are working with younger guys who are, you know, under 14 and under 15, but I think they all really understood, you know, what playing for Team USA means. They're representing themselves, their families, you know, the soldiers that are overseas, the freedoms and all the rights we have here, you know, to live in this great country. And it's just a special, special place. And I enjoyed it, and hopefully I'm fortunate to continue working with them in the future.
Well, I'll tell you what, you gave me chills talking about listening to the national anthem wearing a USA jersey. I'm happy for you, man, because I know obviously you've worked hard to put yourself in that position and in that place, and I'm glad they recognize that. And that leads us right, and that's why you're the perfect guest. Like I told you were the very first guest we've had on Calls from the Clubhouse that we're going to specifically dive into the catching position. And you know, we've talked pitching, talked hitting, we've had a plenty of guests on and talked through, but you're the first catching guy, and that obviously speaks a lot of what we think of you, but also just your career in baseball, and especially with catching. But I think there's a lot of different realms we can go, man, where I want to kind of start this off is kind of where before we got started, we were talking through this. I think looking at the catching position, and for a lot of guys aren't specific catching coaches, and more importantly, recruiters, when we're looking at exactly what we need out of that catching position, and being a guy that's lived it and coached it, if you had to build that catcher, what are the main attributes you want that catcher to possess, and obviously how that directly affects on the field performance, but how would you build that ideal catch?
You know, that's a great question. It kind of reminds, when you say that, it makes me think of a video game where you have X amount of points, and I get to a lot, you know, 50 points to receiving and 50 points to blocking and so on and so forth. You know, all of the really smart catching guys that I talk with, and I've been fortunate enough to you know, have conversations with some really smart guys. I think everybody agrees that the number one most important thing, you know, that a coach looks for in his catcher is the ability to receive, number one, probably block, number two, and throwing, number three, which is kind of funny because in the recruiting world today, you know, catchers are extremely worried about their pop time, which it is important. I do want catchers that can, you know, that has a good arm and a quick release and can throw accurately and can help shut down the running game. But in terms of receiving and blocking, I think that a guy that receives well first is the most important thing we look for, and then blocking balls in the dirt, and then third would be throwing. And then after that would become all the other skills. And the reason we kind of get to that is, if guys have listened to me talk before or read my book, I say, you know, in any given game, we're going to have to receive or catch probably 100 pitches. Or, you know, give or take some depending on the level we're at. Balls that are thrown in the dirt, if we had to block 10 to 15, that would be a lot. You know, if you're blocking 15 balls a night, we got to work with the pitching staff because they got some issues. But then throwing to second base, you know, if you have 3 to 4 steal attempts a night, that would be a lot. So just, you know, moving up the triangle, moving up the pyramid, just from sheer numbers, we're going to receive a lot more balls than we're going to throw, and then we're going to block more balls than we're going to throw as well. So I'd like a guy that receives well first, has mobility, moves around great behind the plate, and can block well and keep the ball in front, and then third, throw. But like I said, that is one of the things that kind of happens in recruiting now, that you know, you get a number attached to you because that's the easiest thing to measure, I believe.
Sure.
You know, for a guy that goes to a showcase or goes to a camp and he's going to throw a pop time, we're going to have him on a stopwatch, and maybe he throws a 2-0 or a 2-1 down to second. That's a hard number that a coach or a scout can look at and we can use to put beside a catcher's name, whereas receiving and blocking, they're a little more objective. You know, what's a good receiver? What's a good blocker? Mm-hmm. In my opinion or my philosophy, it might be a little bit different than your opinion or your philosophy. And it's just harder to put a, you know, a specific number on or specific way to describe a guy, where throwing is a lot easier. So I think that's one of the reasons that throwing has become, you know, much more important to the recruiting process.
There's no doubt, and obviously we've both been recruiters, and I think it's always, when we talk to players, it's you know, the outfield arm is a similar position in that the arm strength gets so heavily touted, and it's like, well, how many times as an outfielder do you have an opportunity to throw somebody out? Now, when that opportunity, just like a catcher, when it presents itself, you better be ready to throw somebody out. You better have the arm strength or the time to be able to do that. But like you mentioned, I think it's just an invaluable perspective is the element of receiving, and you're going to have your hand on that many pitches and obviously influence the game and influence the umpire and obviously help your pitching staff. I think you're dead on, you know, and again, talking to an expert. Now let's go to a coaching staff that doesn't have a catcher or catching guy, quote unquote, on staff. What advice can you give them? Because, you know, there's so many of those opportunities out there. There's not as many catching specific guys. There's a lot of infield guys or pitching guys, but catching guys are hard to find in coaching. So what would you offer that staff that's looking to develop their catchers, but they don't truly have that catching guy around?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I've had the exact same conversation with a lot of guys over the past decade, you know, in my coaching career. And I've gotten a lot of emails and phone calls from guys that maybe they've seen one of my videos online or they've heard of me, and they said, "Coach," you know, all the phone calls and emails are very similar. They start off like this. Say, "Coach, I'm really excited. I just got my first coaching job at blah, blah, blah school, and I can't wait to get going. The only bad news is the head coach wants me to work with catchers. I've never caught a day in my life. I've never coached catchers a day in my life. Please help. I don't know where to start." And, right. You know, I think there's a lot more of those guys that are passionate about coaching. They're trying to get their foot in the door. And they kind of get, I hate to say, stuck working with catchers, but a lot of staffs don't have, you know, a go-to catching guy. Mm-hmm. Just because, again, if you look at numbers, you know, there's only one guy catching on the field at a time. There's going to be 15 guys in the bullpen. There's a lot of guys that have pitching, you know, playing pitching experience. A lot of guys have hitting experience, you know, for hitting coaches. But for a guy to work with a defensive position as a catcher, which in my opinion, and I'm probably biased, but I think it's the most important position on the field, besides the pitcher, within reason.
Right.
But you know, besides that, there's not very many guys that have experience doing it. And I think it really is a very cerebral position that if you haven't played, it's really hard to understand. So for the guys like that, the first advice that I would give is, you know, the conversation we just had about what's most important, you know, receiving, mm-hmm. blocking, and throwing. I would want these guys to come up with a pretty detailed system, or at least organizational practice plan, where every single day they're going to work with their catchers and they're going to practice receiving. Every single day they're going to work with the catchers and practice blocking. And then every day they're going to try to work on one other skill. That might be pop flies, it might be tag plays at the plate, it might be pass balls and wild pitches. It doesn't matter what the other focus is, but every single day you have to work on receiving and blocking, because that's the foundation of catching. And if you can't receive and if you can't block, well, I hate to say it, but it's going to be hard to put you back there and get a whole lot of playing time, because as I've kind of right. found, at every level, there's a direct correlation between how many games you win and lose and how many pass balls and wild pitches you have. When balls are going to the backstop, you know, often it's hard to have a championship team. And again, that's another thing that I've found, that, you know, there's a lot of good teams that have average catchers. There's no great teams that have average catchers. Every great championship team has a good guy behind the plate. And again, it all starts with the receiving and blocking. So that's what I would start urging these guys to do, is really focus on the receiving and blocking, and try to quit worrying so much about some of the other things.
That was a great advice, and obviously I hope listeners are out there taking that in, because, like you mentioned, there's just not so many guys out there that are versed in it. But, I mean, kind of stay on that just a little bit more, Zan, but what would you offer a guy coming out, and he's getting into coaching, and he's trying to be a little more diverse? And, again, it's like getting a bachelor's degree versus a master's degree. You separate yourself. I grew up as an infielder. I'm a hitting guy. But also, if there's an opportunity to go be a catching coach somewhere, I want to have that background, that knowledge. What would you offer that particular coach?
The way the world is now with the internet and technology, there's an abundant amount of information out there if you're willing to look for it and willing to find it. Again, it could be a YouTube video. It could be a book. It could be a DVD. I'll be honest. Personally, there's a website on the internet, I forget the name of it, but they had a sale last week. I bought like 12 catching DVDs. You know, I think I have a personal library of about 15 catching DVDs and every book I can find.
That's awesome.
I would put my library up against anybody's, because if it's out there, and I'm not saying that makes me the greatest coach, but I definitely have a lot of information, and it's a lot easier to get now. So, you know,
sure,
start with looking for things like that. Another thing is there's just a brotherhood amongst catchers and catching coaches. Anytime I see somebody, you know, at the ABCA convention, and maybe I've not met him before, but they say, hey, coach, I'm working with the catchers over here and there, and we immediately hit it off. Because there's just this understanding that, okay, you work with catchers, I work with catchers, now we're in the same fraternity. So if there's a guy you respect, or maybe a catching coach in your state or in your area, I feel pretty confident in saying that if you were to call the guy up or email him, he would probably be willing to have a 30-minute conversation with you and help you out, myself included. If there's a, you know, a young coach out there that's in this situation like this and they just don't know where to start, they shoot me an email. I'm more than happy to talk to them and, you know, try to guide them in the right direction or try to give them some advice and some of the things that I've learned over my career. But, man, there's a lot of guys out there that are willing to do the same thing just because they're just like me and just like you. They're just baseball rats and just want to talk baseball.
That's it. That's 100% it. If you're looking at a daily practice schedule, and I think that's where sometimes coaches, especially if they aren't versed in catching, they struggle with, you know, what do we need to work on? How do we go about tackling a daily practice schedule? But there's also some kind of essentials that these catchers and the whole entire group of them, core of them, need to be working on every day. What would you add to that in terms of daily practice schedules? What would that look like for the catchers?
Okay, and I'll go ahead and say this. You know, I think a lot of guys, they try to do the right thing. You know, they had their catcher catching the bullpen, and I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, bullpen work is the best work that we can possibly get. It's live. We're right there with the pitcher. We're listening to the pitching coach. We're catching sliders. We got to block balls on dirt. We get a lot of great work in the bullpen, but that can't be the only work you do. I think a lot of young coaches that I talk to, you know, they say, oh, well, our catcher's catching the bullpen, and then they go hit and blah, 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 and that's kind of their schedule. Well, we need more reps than that. You know, infielders, I don't know, Jeremy, how many reps do you think in a ground ball, how many ground balls do you think a shortstop takes each day at practice?
If we're hitting Mass Fungo, they might get 30, some version of that.
Okay, and then maybe during BP, they might get some more.
Sure.
You know, when we're going to catch in bullpens, we're going to get a very limited number just because of the pitch count and the times of year and things that are going on there. You know, I would like to see a catcher get, you know, 30 reps receiving at least every single day, at least 30 reps of blocking every day, and then the bullpen work that goes along with it. You know, so the bullpen work is great,
sure,
but it can't be the only thing you do. So the way our practice schedule has kind of worked out, and I've been fortunate at the places I've coached, before practice kind of starts, they stretch and throw, and then we have an individual defensive session that could be anywhere from, you know, 15 to 25 minutes, depending on the day. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to start off with some very easy receiving drills, and I even did these drills with the USA guys last week. And the analogy I always use is, you know, I think hitting off of a tee is a very good drill. It's not a difficult drill. I mean, I can still go out there and hit off a tee and hit line drives, so it's not difficult, and you're going to have a lot of success off of it, but that doesn't mean it's a poor drill. And a lot of our receiving drills start the same way, where, you know, a coach or a partner is on a knee, you know, 15 to 25 feet away, and they're throwing balls in pretty easy, and we're working on, you know, a few particular things. For my philosophy and what I believe in, we're going to work on keeping our head still, keeping our body quiet, and having strong hands when we catch the ball. And then as we do a round of that, now we'll back it up, start throwing much more firm to simulate a pitcher and simulate a ball coming in much harder, which, again, is kind of like progressing from tee work into front flips or batting practice. You know, it's still not an extremely difficult drill, but it's a little more difficult, and it gets us closer to live speed and game speed action. So I like to do our receiving like that. Same thing with our blocking. I've never been a huge fan of blocking off a machine when a ball's coming in 80 miles an hour, just for the fact of I've been fortunate and I've worked with college guys and I've worked with some of these Team USA guys now. The last thing I can do is get a guy hurt and have a guy miss games. If I would have pulled that, if I'd have been with Team USA and we did blocking drills and I bust out a pitching machine and I had a guy wear one off the finger and break his finger, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have asked me back. We have to be smart about what we do. And I'm not saying there's not a time and place for blocking off of a machine, because there certainly is. I'm just saying in the setting that I've been, I think I do a lot more drill work with these guys for blocking that emphasizes the mechanics, emphasizes the quickness, and also emphasizes the reaction. So a lot of guys, we had this conversation, down in Cary a few weeks ago with a couple of guys. There's one thing that a lot of catching coaches and catchers don't practice, and that's the actual reaction part of the process. A lot of guys go through their blocking drills, but they know that their partner, their coach, is going to throw it to the same spot every time. So if we're working on blocking to our glove side, well, we know before the pitch is even thrown that the coach is going to throw it in the dirt and it's going to be to my glove side, and that's exactly where I have to be. But we all know that when the game rolls around, our pitcher doesn't tell us that he's going to throw it in the dirt to our glove side.
Right.
So we have to learn to react. And so I like doing drills that kind of add that component of it too.
You know, I'm interested as we're developing catchers and we're talking through you, giving us some super positive information on how to help our guys. But as we're moving forward, are there some, you know, like problems that may hinder them from development that maybe we need to be aware of as coaches?
You know, well, and again, this is another conversation I have with a lot of guys recently. One of the problems that I think is going on right now, and I kind of referenced it earlier, you know, I think catchers have to be, and again, I'm biased, but I think catchers have to be the smartest players on the field, because we're the field general, we're the middle linebacker, we're the quarterback. We have to know what every position player is supposed to do on every play. We have to know which pitches all the guys throw. We have to know, what makes guys tick. There's a lot going on. And I think a lot of the younger guys now are practicing a lot less and playing a lot more. While that develops some skills for some guys, I think it really hinders catchers. Because you can't get away from it. You have to practice to really learn the game. And that can be anything from bunt defense to, you know, I guess the blanket broad statement of baseball theory, and then to getting to learn our own teammates and our coaching staff, and kind of just the different dynamics there. I think we have to practice more. And again, that's more practices, but it's probably also more time practicing. And that kind of gets me into something I'm pretty passionate about, and that's working with catchers. And I've always said that, you know, good catchers or above average catchers, they don't just show up, you know, when they're supposed to stretch and leave after the last, you know, sprint or whenever practice is over. We have to get there early. We have to stay late. We have to work extra because during our practice schedule, we're just torn in so many different directions. You know, we may have to catch in the bullpen, go through our batting practice groups, try to get some drill work in. And, you know, before you know it, you can look up and, man, the practice is gone and catcher's having to go over here. He has to catch four different bullpens during the day and had to take this, you know, batting practice group over here. And then we had bunt defense during or first and third defense. And you look up and there's not a whole lot of time left for the individual catcher's defensive segment. And I think it's very, very important. So if you're a coach and, you know, you really want your catchers to do well, you know, sometimes that means we have to get out to practice early. Sometimes that means we have to stay late with them to work on all the things we have to work on. Because another thing that's unique about catching is we have more skills to master than any other position player on the field. You know, we have to receive and block and throw to first, second, and third. We have to field bunts. We have to be able to retrieve pass balls and wild pitches, catch pop flies, you know, just to name a few. We have a lot of different skill sets we've got to master. And if you practice something one time a week, it's going to be hard to really be proficient in it. And again, the analogy I use with that is if I want to start learning guitar, I need to practice for at least an hour, maybe 2 hours a day. And same thing holds true with catching. You know, if you want to be really good at catching pop flies, which gets overlooked a lot at the younger ages, you have to practice it. And I've been around a lot of coaches and programs that they just don't practice that because they feel like it's going to happen, you know, once or twice possibly a game at most. So they just feel like, well, it's not going to happen very often. We'll spend our time on different things. So as a coach, your responsibility is to make time to practice it so you can get in all the skills that we have to master.
You know, another element, and while you were talking, it kind of, you know, hit me that, again, a lot of us may not have the grasp on it, but you really start to look at, obviously, the position itself and how much flexibility plays into this. And, again, being out on the road recruiting, you can see guys that just their hip flexibility is not there in terms of allowing them to get down into their stance in a comfortable place, but make it easier for the umpire, which will lead us into dealing with umpires. But talk about flexibility and maybe give, if you can, some examples or directions to four guys in terms of specific stretches that will help loosen them up and get them in a better place to be a better catcher.
Yeah, again, great question. You know, and that's why one of the guys at Catcher Con I had last year was Greg Robbins from Cressy Sports Performance. And I think everybody listening to this is familiar with Eric Cressy. I think he's been on your podcast.
He has, yeah. Awesome. Pretty recently.
Yeah, great guy. You know, they're at the forefront of baseball strength training and flexibility and mobility and everything associated in that realm. And, you know, first of all, just go to their website and start checking their stuff out if you haven't already. I can't imagine you're listening to this and you haven't been to Cressy's website. But if you haven't, go start checking that stuff out. Another thing that I like is I like yoga. And I don't think guys necessarily need to, you know, do an hour to hour and a half session of yoga every single day or every single week. But there are certain yoga stretches or poses, if we want to call them, that are great for catchers. And one of my favorites is called the frog stretch. So for a guy that has never heard of that, doesn't know what it is, I'll be honest, it's a little hard to explain. Other than it does a great job of opening up your hips. Just Google frog stretch. You'll know exactly what I mean. I'm sure videos and pictures will pop up. But that's a great one for a catcher that helps with hip mobility. It helps with flexibility as well. So that's one that I like our guys to do every day. And then there are a few other, you know, hip mobility exercises. Again, bands are great. I was talking to Dan Heefner, as the head coach at Dallas Baptist this past week, you know, when he was one of the Team USA guys, and he was showing me some great band stretches those guys do where they really open up their hips and allow their catchers to squat. He has their guys do every day. I think that's an excellent resource. But it is tough, and that's something that a lot of guys just fail to work on, to be honest. I think we're all guilty at some point of kind of going through the motions, you know, during our stretching routine. But the more and more refined is how important it is.
Along those same lines, again, kind of where my mind went as a coach went to the flexibility behind the plate that allows, obviously, the guy behind us, the most important guy, to see each pitch and hopefully be able to influence the game with our receiving, with our flexibility behind the plate. So I'm more interested, do you deal with the guys you work with? Do you have just a segment, or do you spend time discussing how to really develop that relationship with the umpire? Because I think, Zan, we were talking about this again before we got going. I think coaches just assume that, man, this guy's caught all his life and he knows how to talk with umpires. But sometimes there's personality conflicts. Sometimes there's tricks of the trade. But what would you offer in terms of getting that umpire on your side? How can we help our guys out?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And kind of before I get into that, you said something that sparked a thought in my mind, and it's something that I've kind of noticed happen over the past few years. And, you know, we talked about earlier technology changing. Technology has changed a lot, especially at the big league level, where now you start to see reports and there's actual statistics of catchers are best at, you know, getting called balls for strikes or balls at the bottom of the zone. You know, they have Z-scores. The umpires have access to that. And just because of the cost, it hasn't quite caught on at the younger level yet, but I'm sure – things will get less expensive. Colleges will have equipment like that. And then, you know, there could be some high schools that even have the TrackMan type equipment that gauges the umpire's strike zone and then the catcher's ability to receive. So, you know, I guess where I'm going with that is there's definitely more of an emphasis put on that now than there ever has been, simply because of some of those stats that, you know, FanGraphs and those guys will put out. So that does make it really interesting, and I like following those things. So anyway, I know that's kind of the long way around it, and you wanted me to talk about, you know, how do we deal with the umpires. The first thing I would say is, number one, just be respectful. And that should go without saying, but I see a lot of guys that they're not as respectful as they should be. And they may be the verbal communication may be respectful. They may say yes, sir, no, sir. But sometimes the nonverbal communication is not very good. Whether it be a coach in the dugout, you know, yells, "Where was that pitch?" or, you know, "Is that high or low?" or whatever. And the, you know, you see the catcher. I hate to say throw the umpire under the bus, but he kind of throws the umpire under the bus. you know, and
right.
And so those are some things you need to be conscious of. And I know when I was catching, that was always a tough thing to do. That if you thought the umpire made the right call, you just got to tell the coach, "Hey, he made the right call." And sometimes when he didn't make the right call, you had to signal back to the dugout that he made the right call. I mean, you've got to have his back, and he's got to have your back. And again, I'm not endorsing catchers lying to their coaches out there. But as a coach, let's not put our catcher in a situation where he's asked to throw his umpire under the bus, because that's one of the most important relationships we have. There's, you know, as far as from the second, you know, the first inning, we go out there, shake his hand, ask to know his name. You know, and again, the younger guys, you can call him sir. A lot of these umpires, they don't want to be called blue. They don't want to be called ump. You know, if he tells you his name is Joe Smith, call him Joe, call him Mr. Smith, call him by his name. That goes a long way with them. You know, just things like that. Talk to these guys, get to know them. And, you know, umpires, you know, like I told earlier, you know, catching is a brotherhood. Umpiring is a brotherhood, too. And if we're respectful and polite and we do our job for these umpires, you know, they're going to talk back in the clubhouse or in the locker room, and they're going to talk about what a great guy you were and how good of a good job you did blocking balls and keeping balls off of them. And then you start to get a reputation amongst the umpires in your area or state or wherever it may be. And that's, you know, you want to have a good reputation for doing those things, for taking care of your guy, for, you know, for not throwing them under the bus if there's a questionable call, and then keeping balls off of them, because those guys don't want to get hit. I can promise you that. They don't like taking it when the catcher jumps out of the way and tries to pick balls in the dirt when he should block them, and they start getting hit all over the place. So they don't want to get beat up and bruised up, and it's our job to keep them clean.
That's such a, you know, it's like we talk about catchers, their jobs to make the pitchers look like a superstar. At the same time, you're also wearing the responsibility. You got to protect that umpire. And you're absolutely dead on it. That is terrific insight. Let's get into some specifics, because I know we talked. It's going to be tough to get truly specific, but let's start talking about ways to improve catchers, and we'll try to stay on, you know, and spend time on each topic. But we're going to start with receiving, like we talked, this being one of the main pieces of a great catcher is being able to receive and win pitches. But what are some ways that coaches can improve a catcher's ability to receive?
I think the first thing a coach needs to do is really understand it and understand the terminology we use. And again, the terminology that I use, there's other guys out there that teach different things, and that's fine. There's other guys that have different thoughts, and that's completely okay too. And I kind of referenced it, you know, quickly earlier, is I want guys to have a quiet body and a still head, so that when we receive, we don't really move around much back there. In the old term, guys used to call it sway. You know, guys would sway and try to catch the ball in the middle of their body, where they kind of, and I think the listeners probably understand what I'm talking about, but where we have a lot of body movement so that we can hopefully center the ball in the middle of our chest. If we're set up down the middle of the plate and the pitcher misses inside to a right-handed pitcher, you know, we actually shift our body over as much as we can so that we catch the ball in the middle of our chest protector. Where I'm not necessarily a fan of that. I don't like guys shifting around back there. I don't guys moving around. I like them to stay as quiet as possible. But in order to do that, we have to have strong hands. And by strong hands, what I mean is as soon as the ball hits our mitt hopefully shouldn't move very much after that. And again, it takes a lot of practice and it takes a lot of work to do that. But the goal is to get these guys better at it. And to get them better is you have to understand a very specific goal. So again, it's important that you come up with a system, whether you say strong hands or you say soft hands, whatever terminology you choose is okay. But we have to reinforce that over and over and over, day in and day out. It's not something you can say on the first day of practice and then expect them to do in game one. We should have to talk about it. They should hear you. If you're in my camp and you like, you know, quiet body and strong hands, they should hear you say that 10 times a day to help reinforce it. Because, again, you know, catching the ball is a lot different than football. I mean, there's an art to it. You know, if I'm a receiver and I catch a football, it doesn't matter if I catch it with two hands, catch it with one hand, catch it off my helmet. A reception is a reception.
Right.
Well, all catches for the catcher aren't created equal. Just because the ball ends up in your mitt – does not necessarily mean that you did a good job receiving the baseball. So with that said, we have to have a trained eye. We have to have a specific system we use. And that's kind of how I've built, I guess, my practices and things around that. So, the number one thing that I like is for guys to have quiet bodies where we're not shifting around much back there. We have strong hands where we can really control the ball. And both of those kind of reference what we were just talking about with umpires. Mm-hmm. This is to give umpires a better view and to make them more comfortable and to try to present the ball to them as similarly as possible as we can, pitch after pitch after pitch, so that we can hopefully get them in a repetition and kind of train them like Pavlov's dog, where they get used to calling strikes for us.
That's it. Raise that right arm. That's the key.
That's right. That's right. Hey, you're laughing at me, but I'm serious. There are certain things that guys do. Catchers, a lot of the good ones, every time they catch a strike, they'll make a small under their breath, good job, good, good. Every time they catch it, good, good. And the umpire gets used to hearing that. Now you catch a ball 3 inches off the plate and you say good. Well, he hears you say good. And he might be a little bit more likely to call it a strike. So I'm giving away all my secrets here, all my psychology secrets. But again, there are certain things like that. There are small things that get overlooked.
Yeah.
I like our guys to do, and I think it's helpful. And it's important. Stuff like that is important. Everything counts.
Well, I know it's tough to blend these two questions together, but I want to know about some drills. What are some of your favorite receiving drills? I know it's just reinforcing quiet head and stuff is great, but also what are the drills inside the exacts of receiving specifics that you could offer through this podcast?
Okay, so we kind of talked earlier about receiving, the easier receiving drills. Some of the more difficult receiving drills that I like and anybody can implement, I love receiving balls off of a pitching machine. I love receiving high-velocity balls off of a pitching machine that are at or above the game velocity that we're going to catch. And we can do that by, pumping the pitching machine up to where it's throwing fast. And we can also shorten the reaction time and shorten the distance so that, one of my favorite drills is, let's say we start off at, 45 or 50 feet. The catcher receives a ball and then takes one step up. Receives a ball, takes a step up. Receives a ball, takes a step up until they get basically as close as they can, without putting them in danger of, getting hurt. But I like them to get as close as possible so that they have to really react quickly. And again, I didn't really get into it a minute ago, but one of the keys to receiving high-velocity pitches is you just have to stay relaxed. The looser you are back there, the better you're going to be. You can't catch guys like Aroldis Chapman by being tight. You have to be loose, and this is a drill that helps guys stay loose and get used to catching high-velocity pitches. Another drill that I absolutely love is I love using Incrediballs. And the Incrediballs, guys are probably familiar with them. They're rag balls. I think Easton makes them. They're soft. Mm-hmm. They're squishy. Just to be honest, they're hard to catch. So when you throw an Incrediball at somebody, or to somebody, I guess I should say, and they have to catch it in their mitt, if they don't catch it exactly in the pocket, it's going to pop out. That's just it. If you catch it a little bit in the heel, a little bit on the toe, catch it too deep in the pocket, because it's soft and bouncy, it's going to bounce around your mitt, and you're not going to catch it. So catching Incrediballs is another great drill. And you can throw those out of a pitching machine as well. And when you get those things coming in quickly, it makes it really, really difficult. So what that does is raise the level of awareness, and it causes guys to have to focus during the drills. And that's what we're really looking for. We're looking for drills where guys have to raise their awareness level and focus so they don't just go through the drills, kind of start going through the motions, which a lot of times guys do because, let's be honest, sometimes catching drills aren't the most fun. And as a catching coach, your job is to make them fun to where your catchers actually want to do them and want to get better and see results from them.
Stay on that as we kind of move down from receiving to now blocking, being obviously the second most needed skill behind the plate. What are some ways that coaches can improve a catcher's blocking and then offer some drills as well?
Yeah, similarly for blocking and throwing, or blocking and receiving, I should say, I think they are similar in the fact that a lot of guys kind of just take the easy route and only practice the things that don't develop all the skills. So with that said, I do like doing the easy blocking drills like I talked about earlier, but I also like doing the blocking drills that really cause guys to focus and have a high state of mental awareness. So one of the drills I like to do, I call it half and half, where I'm throwing curveballs to the catcher. Half are going to be in the air, half are going to be in the dirt, and he doesn't know, when it's going to be in the air, when it's going to be in the dirt. Similar, like we talked about earlier, to a game, you don't know when the pitcher is going to bounce one. Our job as a catcher is to always anticipate it and try to be ready for it, but we don't really know when that's going to happen. So we have to cause him to react. You know, we don't want to just throw every ball in the dirt. Every day we should have some sort of, you know, some number of repetitions where they have to actually react. One of my favorite drills now, and I learned it from Tanner Swanson at Washington. He spoke at CatcherCon last year. One of the drills he did with his guys was he'll be going through blocking drills, going through receiving drills. He'll mix them to where in one drill we have to work on receiving and blocking, kind of like the half-and-half drill. But he even kind of took it a step further where he'll yell, as soon as he throws it, he'll yell runner or yell there he goes, to where that instead of just receiving and blocking, now the catcher has to be mentally aware and they have to go through their throwing mechanics and throwing footwork. So that, again, they know what they're working on, but at all times they have to be able to react and react quickly and kind of build those cognitive skills like that.
That's really good. I'm ashamed to say I didn't do that when we coached our catchers when I was coaching. That's a really great addition to that drill. And lastly, throwing. You know, there was a lot of ways we can go on this one, but ways to improve a catcher's throwing, and then just some great drills or more, maybe more coaching points that guys should really focus on to help improve their catchers in that area.
Yeah, you know, throwing is a little bit more difficult than receiving and blocking, I would say, simply because you can't do it every day. You can receive every day, you can block every day, just from the arm health perspective of it. You can't throw to second base. You know, you can't throw to second base 20 times every single day because you're going to be tired and get fatigue. Now, making a limited number of throws is good. You can also throw at a shorter distance, which is good. And I think throwing at a shorter distance is great. That's one of the things that I've kind of taken away. You know, have the second baseman or shortstop, you know, stand behind the mound, or even sometimes in front of the mound or on top of the mound, where we've really shortened the distance and we're still going through our footwork and we have to throw the ball to a target, but we don't have to have the same strain we put on our arm when we're throwing the full 127 feet. And again, as you can tell, I'm big on analogies. That's just how my mind works. But the analogy that I use is, you know, when we go bowling, and I'm not a very good bowler, but if I look at the pins at the end of the lane, I'm not very good. But if I look at the tick marks that are 10 feet down the lane and I aim for the middle tick mark, that one's a lot easier to hit, and my results are a lot better because it's easier to hit a target that's very close. So for guys working on their accuracy, you know, that's a great thing to do, is just shorten the target. You can do that inside. If you want to have your catcher throw inside a cage, you know, you can get tape and put up a square at the end of the cage at a particular height and have him be, you know, a particular distance away. And his goal is to throw it through that, you know, 1 foot by 1 foot square, 2 foot by 2 foot square. And things like that are very similar to where we're bowling, and we're aiming for a small target, you know, really close to us. But if we can hit that target, then we'll hit our target that's much further down the road. And that's a good one that I like to do a lot. Like I said, it's harder to throw every day, you know, two bases just because of practice time, because of arm health and things like that. But that's probably my favorite one.
Do you have a specific, or not necessarily it always had to be implemented, but do you have an idea about a catch play routine that maybe catchers go that keep them almost in a game-like environment while they play catch, allows them to kind of work on some skills that they'll apply directly to the game?
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing I'll say is I think when guys are throwing before their game getting loose, that is a very underutilized time overall. You know, a lot of guys are you know, joking around in the outfield, like we talked about stretching earlier. Guys don't always take that very serious. You know, when guys are throwing before the game, they don't always take that very serious either. They're kind of, you know, talking about a test they just had, or talking about their girlfriend, or talking about what's going on in SportsCenter, or you name it. And that's a time where we can really do some particular things. Every time a ball is thrown to you, you should work on receiving it well, using the terminology, you know, quiet body, strong hands, but we can also work on our throwing then as well too. I think every day that a catcher throws, doesn't, you know, not long toss days, the minimum a catcher should ever throw is 127 feet, because the minimum distance that we're going to have to throw, you know, a ball to second is 127 feet. So if you only throw 90 feet before the game and you're expecting to make a good throw to second base in the top of the first, I don't know how you're going to do that if you haven't thrown balls there. So before the game, I do like guys to get a number of repetitions after they've stretched it out and bringing it back in, go down through your footwork, you know, where we're actually working on our mechanics before the game, trying to get different reps. And again, it doesn't have to be 30 of them a day. If we can get, you know, between 5 and 10 where we're going through our footwork, going through our mechanics, that's very helpful. Another thing that guys don't do, is in the bullpen, we should work on receiving balls that are coming game speed and our footwork off of that. And I think everybody's been a victim of that at some point, where we get into a habit of, we'll do our receiving drills and the catchers are working on the transfer, you know, but they're not working on transferring a ball when it's maybe a 78-mile-an-hour slider, because the only time you see that is in the game. So when we're in the bullpen, there are certain times you may say, hey, every third pitch, you're going to go through your footwork, you know, throwing the ball down to second base. You know, every time the pitcher's in the stretch, we're going to receive from the secondary position to get him, one, to get our leg strength built up to that, and also to get the pitcher used to seeing us in our secondary position. But again, throwing in the bullpen after receiving live pitches is something that we can do and we should do, because it is different. You know, if I'm throwing you as a coach, if I'm throwing you a ball at 52 miles an hour, that's pretty easy to catch and transfer and throw every time. But when you have, you know, your Friday night starter maybe throwing 91 or 92, that's a little bit more difficult, especially if it's not right down the middle of the plate. And maybe he misses his spot, you know, arm side, or misses high, and now we're expected to make a good quality throw, even though it wasn't a perfect pitch. But if you haven't ever practiced that, you know, it's hard to do. So that's one thing that I like for guys to do, too, is actually practice receiving off, you know, game speed throws.
I'm excited to kind of give you the platform to talk about this, and it's going to lead us right into the ABCA convention. But you've kind of branched off and done your own that's really directly around catching coaches and bringing them together, or catching enthusiasts, it might be a better way. But guys that get everybody in the same area, and you have your speaker list, and you're talking through – basically how to become a better catching coach. You want to talk about CatcherCon a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to. Like you said, you know, I kind of mentioned it earlier, the catching community it's a brotherhood. You know, if I see a guy at a ballpark and I know he works with catchers, or he knows that I work with catchers, we seem to immediately hit it off and we seem to start talking. And what CatcherCon is, it's basically just a full weekend where, you know, catching coaches or even catchers or parents of catchers can go, and you're going to get a very in-depth, full look at and hear from catching coaches who are at the top of the game and are very, very good at it. Last year, the lineup was phenomenal. We had Tom Griffin from Carson Newman, who spoke at the ABCA this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Weinstein spoke twice for us. His presentations were on pitch calling and receiving. And then we had, like I said, Tanner Swanson, who spoke, you know, about different drill progression. And again, the list goes on. We had 8 presentations total. But what it was, again, it was a weekend for guys to come in who just want more catching than what they're used to getting. You know, so for me, like I said, I love going to the ABCA convention every year, and I love listening to the guys that present on catching. But I'm a catching guy. I can't get enough of it. You know, I want more than that. So for a guy like me who wants to learn as much as he can about catching, and believe me, I learned a lot about catching last year at CatcherCon. This is where you go, and I'm going to have it every year in Nashville, the second weekend in December. This year it's December 9th through 11th, and I haven't released the lineup yet. It'll be another couple of weeks before I release all the details and the full lineup of speakers. But for the guys that have heard about it or read about it last year, this year it's going to be just as good, if not better. I've got a waiting list for guys who want to come right now, and I'll be honest, it's probably the most fun weekend of the year for me. I told the guys spending time with Team USA was the most fun I've had in a long time. The only thing that comes in second to that is my weekend of CatcherCon, where a guy like me who just can't get enough of it, I get to meet catching guys from all over the country and talk with highly intelligent people who feel, you know, the same as me. One of my favorite parts about CatcherCon was we had a roundtable discussion where we fielded questions from the audience, and we just talked about different things. And one of the unique things about it is you have a lot of very well-respected catching coaches who disagree about certain topics. You know, and again, it was all very respectful, but it was great to hear different guys debate different things. Maybe there's, you know, a professional guy might feel a little bit differently than a college guy about something, or maybe a private instructor feels differently than a high school coach. So we had different ideas and different perspectives, and it was really, really unique. And getting to hear all these other guys, you know, speak, I technically put it on, but I probably learned as much as anybody. You know, you go, you're open-minded, and it was a lot of fun, you know. And again, I didn't list every speaker, so I hope they forgive me, but I was trying to be quick and concise. I didn't want to go through all 8 guys. But it is, just, it's just a full weekend. I mean, it's a weekend-long catching event in Nashville that, you know, hopefully I have going every year.
that leads me right into this because, you know, Zan, you're obviously a guy I love catching up with at our ABCA conventions when I was a coach, now working in the national office. But talk about your membership with ABCA and what that's meant to you, and then obviously what you think it means for coaches moving forward in terms of making themselves better and getting better education content.
Well, I got to admit, I'm kind of guilty. I haven't been to the ABCA convention every year, but every year that I go, I always tell myself, I'm like, man, why do I not go to this every year? Like, I'm an idiot. I have so much fun. I enjoy meeting so many people. So for the past couple of years, just kind of with my, you know, my coaching schedule, I've only gone when it's on this side of the country, you know, in Nashville or Chicago, in Dallas and that type place. But I've convinced myself that I don't care where it is. Y'all can have it in Alaska. I'm going to start going every year because I just love it so much. And, you know, I love the information. Oh, even more than the information is the fellowship, you know, getting to see other guys that, you know, again, coaching is a small, close-knit circle where, you know, I have certain friends that I played with and coached with and against. The only time I get to see them all year long is the ABCA convention because everybody's busy coaching their teams and on the road recruiting. You know, you don't get to just hang out and take 2 weeks off like a guy that has a 9-to-5 job. So for me, the most fun part about it is seeing all the guys. You know, I saw you this year, and we probably spoke for half an hour. And you know, that was other than working camps with you and talking to you on the phone, we haven't sat down and talked for half an hour in a long time. So
no doubt.
And I had those same conversations with a lot of guys just like that. And so every year I've kind of made my mind up that I'm going to start going just because I have so much fun. And again, I learn a lot. That's definitely a credit to the speakers and the guys that you get. But my favorite thing about it is just seeing the coaches and meeting new guys and just, you know, kind of having a guys weekend.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to getting you out in Anaheim and spending some time on the West Coast with us this year. And as we look forward to that convention, it's going to be a great experience. And this is really tying into it because our podcast, what we'd like to do is highlight guys that are out there providing such great information for our coaches. And obviously you're doing that from the catcher's position. Zan, it last little bit here, man, for guys that want to reach out to you, how can they connect with you? Where can they find you? Give them all the pedigree information.
Yeah, and before I give them that, Jeremy, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, you have to reserve one of the nights at the ABCA in Anaheim this year. We're going to have dinner one night, so you're in charge of finding the restaurant.
Done. Consider it done.
All right, deal. Well, yeah, so thanks. But for the guys that are interested in learning more about me or what I do or what I teach, they can find my website at catching101.com. I'm on Twitter at Zan Barksdale, Zan with an X. Again, I'm also on Facebook, Zan Barksdale Catching. Those links, we talked about CatcherCon at catchercon.com. Kind of the hub for everything is Catching 101. You can find me on Twitter. You'll find links to it there. But catching101.com is where guys can find all the links and resources and all my free videos that I've got online.
That is great. And Zan, I cannot thank you enough personally, but also professionally, man, for being on here with us. Thank you for the information. Thanks for making time for us. And we appreciate and value what you're doing for the game of baseball.
Well, keep it up with this podcast. And if you ever want a catching guy to come back on and guys haven't got tired of hearing me speak, I'd love to come again.
Sounds great, man. Well, good luck. And we look forward to catching up with you real soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.
That was a fantastic episode. If you're a catching coach or a catching enthusiast and you want to learn more about that position and its fundamentals, mechanics, drills, mentalities, we know you gained a lot out of this podcast. We're very thankful for Zan Barksdale from Catching 101 to take time out of his schedule to sit down with us. Zan, we could not be more excited about the product that came out of this. We know our coaches will be so excited to listen to it. If you enjoyed this episode and you're interested in the previous episodes we've done, head on over to our website, abca.org. You can click on the resources tab at the top. Call us on the Clubhouse podcast link. We'll be there waiting for you. Click on that page. You'll see all the episodes we've done so far. We've had on just a great multitude of guests, covered a lot of topics, a lot of aspects of coaching baseball, and we know you'll be fired up to check that out. You can also head over to iTunes, search for us on there. You can subscribe to our podcast. It'll show up on your phone each and every time we put a brand new episode out. Give us any kind of feedback on that page. We'd love to hear from you. We're also excited about ABCA Chat. It's a live Twitter chat that we do that's the Monday following the release of our latest Calls from the Clubhouse podcast.
As we move into the fall, we're going to move that date to Tuesday, but it's always at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a great opportunity to share information, network with coaches from all over the world, frankly, but also just get on and talk baseball and find out more information to make yourself a better coach. We're excited about that platform and how great it's gone for us so far. We hope if you're listening to this, you've already decided to become an ABCA member and you've joined one of the over 8,300 ABCA members worldwide that are passionate about our great association. If you have click on our website again, abca.org. You'll find our membership benefits, see all the great things we're doing for coaches in the game. We want you to join and be part of what we're doing with our association. And if you're interested in growing as a baseball coach, you should be a member of the ABCA. If you're into social media, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, at ABCA1945. You can find us on there. We'd love to engage with you directly. You can also find myself on there, at CoachSheets3. My email is sheets@abca.org. We'd love to hear from you and get any kind of feedback that we can. We hope as you're looking ahead to the turn of the year, January 5th through the 8th, we're going to head out to Anaheim, California for our annual ABCA National Convention. It's a great opportunity to hang out with baseball guys just like yourself. Last year in Nashville, we had over 5,600 coaches worldwide that attended our national convention. We're hoping for great numbers this year out in Anaheim. We'd love to see you there. It's a great opportunity to be part of the world's largest gathering of baseball coaches. It's the world's largest baseball trade show, and it's a great opportunity to network and meet more guys like yourself, and we'll be excited to be out there, and we hope to see you there. In the meantime, if we can do anything for you, never hesitate to reach out to our association. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.